91.3 WLRN presents South Florida Arts Beat. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Today, film critic Dan Hudak previews the Miami Jewish Film Festival with their director, Igor Steirenberg. Classical contributor Charles Greenfield talks with Julian Krieger about the Friends of Chamber Music of Miami's upcoming concerts through April. Fairchild Tropical Botanic Garden has a new art center and Dale Chihuly exhibition. Nanette Zapata brings us the exciting details. Chef Norman Van Aken serves up a word on food, and our Broward Arts Calendar features Jody Horn-Leschinski. Please stay with us to catch the arts conversation and information coming up on South Florida Arts Beat right after these news updates from NPR and the WLRN Miami Herald News. Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Happy New Year. Ed Bell with you. Later on the program, Julian Krieger speaks with our classical contributor, Charles Greenfield, about the Friends of Chamber Music of Miami's exciting 59th season, which is ongoing through April. COO Nanette Zapata of the Fairchild Tropical Botanic Garden shares her enthusiasm about their new Rose and McQuillan Art Center and their latest Dale Chihuly exhibition. Chef Norman Van Aken plates up a word on food, and our Broward Arts Calendar features Jody Horn-Leschinski. Well, it's growing by leaps and bounds. The Miami Jewish Film Festival opens on the 15th. Here's our film critic Dan Hudak with his preview.
With more than 11,000 expected attendees, the Miami Jewish Film Festival has become the largest Jewish cultural event in Florida, and this year's edition is more expansive than ever. Sprawling over six venues, three temples, and almost all of Miami, the festival will screen more than 70 films and host more than 50 filmmakers and guests during its run from January 15th through the 29th. It's become, in a word, huge, but not overwhelmingly so for festival director Igor Steirenberg, who took over the festival last year and has revitalized its offerings with year-round screenings and cultural outreach programs. This year's opening night film is Mr. Kaplan, a dark comedy about a Jewish retiree who's convinced that the shy, old German owner of a local restaurant is, in fact, a former Nazi on the run. Another notable film is the Florida premiere of Anita B., which tells the true story of a young Auschwitz survivor who tries to rebuild her life after the war. Here's a bit of the film's trailer.
You know what my dream is if I ever do reach Palestine? I want to write. I want to invent a world that doesn't exist.
The only thing that bothers me is that I can't talk to anyone about what we went through. If I can, I'm going to go away from here.
The 18th annual Miami Jewish Film Festival will also spotlight new voices in Jewish cinema, German Jewish cinema, a short film showcase, and much more. Here with me to discuss it all is festival director Igor Steirenberg. Igor, thank you for joining us on South Florida Arts Beat.
Certainly a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You've been doing the job for more than a year now. What's been your biggest surprise?
The confidence that the film community has had in our organization. We've been able to rebrand and revitalize an 18-year-old festival into something that is now recognized as an international cultural event. So the films that we're going to be premiering, 11 of which are North American premieres, is unheard of, really, within the Jewish sector. And we are so privileged and so honored to have been able to grow so fast and so large.
So obviously you've grown. I wanted to ask you what your approach to programming the festival was. Aside from getting bigger and better, is there anything you're specifically dialing into?
Truly, we're looking to have the festival be a presence year-round. So we've already had over 30 screenings leading up to the January 18th annual celebration. Within the particular platform of our festival in January, we're trying to bring together the best of the best that the industry has to offer in terms of Jewish interest and themed films. We've found films that are selective in their documentary formats, in their narrative film formats, and particularly outstanding films within the short film genre. These are films that have touched my heart, that have left an everlasting impression, and I can't wait really to share them and celebrate them with the entire Greater Miami community. The specifics in terms of targeting which particular films we want to show and not show is really quite a broad question. It really is a film that I have to lose sleep over and feel that it has impacted me in such a direct way that I must show it. There's something that important at stake, that it's going to touch and inspire and perhaps even have a cultural insight for our audience.
Movies, as I often say on ArtsBeat, are a reflection of the society in which they're made. I'm going to presume, and if this is not accurate, please tell me, that when you have movies with heavy Jewish themes, that some trends might emerge from it. Is there any kind of all-encompassing theme that could speak to what Jewish identity is right now in 2014?
Oddly enough, I think that where last year we had a sense of comedy and laughter to have been evocative of the films we were showing, this year I think there's a dominance towards women interest. And many of the films, including Get, which is Israel's official Oscar entry, hearken towards that particular element. What is the woman's identity within the Jewish community? How are they able to relate within a male-dominant society? And these are heavy-hitting points that these movies address, but they do it in such a unique way. And so powerfully, such as Get, which is one of the most Bergman-esque movies you'll see in the next decade, I think, that they really plant a seed of thought in you that grows and blossoms over days, months, and hopefully it's going to stay with you over a year or so. I think that's what the resonant theme thus far has been in some of the selections. Of course, we have films that are much lighter. We are going to be showing Israel's first sci-fi horror movie ever made as a drive-in experience. We're also going to be showing some very lovely documentaries that have a much lighter theme. So there's going to be something for everyone. I think overall that's the kind of important draw that I'm hoping people are going to get out of it. This is not a festival that's just specific towards the Jewish community. It's a festival that's specific towards the art lovers and film lovers in the entire Greater Miami community.
We're talking with Igor Steinberg, the director of the Miami Jewish Film Festival, which begins January 15th. You're all over Miami this year. And I think about this question, I think, well, we have Jewish people all over Miami, so why not? But the concern from my perspective is, aren't you worried about spreading yourself too thin?
It's a shared concern, but there's been such demand last year. 90% of the films we showed last year were either sold out or at rush line. This year, given that need, we decided we had to expand ourselves and give everyone the opportunity to take advantage of a festival. We had to turn so many people away. We received an abundance of calls, people desperately asking us, even willing to bribe us, to just get into a movie. And we needed to kind of really pay attention to that particular yearning, and we wanted to fulfill it. And by expanding the way we have, by growing to 9 venues, over 70 movies, we feel that this is a way that everyone's going to have an opportunity to see these films and experience them, and again, find messaging through them and hopefully become empowered by them.
Just curious, what do they offer as bribes?
We're going to have to keep that in the closet for now.
You're starting with Mr. Kaplan. This is Uruguay's foreign language Oscar entry. For those who don't know, when you hear foreign language Oscar entry, what happens is each country sends one movie to the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. The Academy has a screening committee. They choose the 5 Oscar nominees when the time comes. Mr. Kaplan is Uruguay's submission, and it's opening your festival.
It's an amazingly lovable black comedy. I can't really truly wait for our audience to experience this delightful film. It's going to really hit all the right buttons. And I really believe that the Academy will be foolish not to decide to have it represent in the foreign language category.
Igor Steinberg, director of the Miami Jewish Film Festival, with us. Spotlight on German cinema at this year's Miami Jewish Film Festival.
German cinema has such a rich history with past directors such as Werner Herzog, Rainer Werner Fassbinder, and we were very lucky that this year there has been such a great breadth of selections. Some of the films are going to really hit on the theme of Holocaust. Others, such as from the director of The Counterfeiters, who won an Academy Award for that particular film, is providing an experimental documentary about exactly what was the banality of evil. The selection of films from this particular spotlight are prominent, but it's also due to the support that the German consulate has provided us in this community. And they've done so much good within Miami that we felt this was the best way for us to connect with them, strengthen our partnership, and celebrate them as a partner. And so we feel so lucky to be sharing these great movies as partners with the German consulate this year.
Igor, you have more than 50 filmmakers and guests coming to town, including producer Nancy Spielberg. I know what everyone's thinking. She's his sister. Tell us about some of the guests.
Well, Nancy, first and foremost, is absolutely adorable, and I can't wait to have her here in our community and for us to really connect with her. She is indeed the sister of Steven Spielberg, but she also has a creative line within her work. This isn't the first film she's produced, and hopefully not the last. It's an amazing film about a band of brothers who went to Israel and tried to defend Israel during the War of Independence, and this is an amazing movie called Above and Beyond. We're also going to have Lacey Schwartz. She's a first-time director of a movie called Little White Lie. A movie has had amazing traction in the New York Times, MSNBC, and we're going to have her here in person. The film talks about racial issues and tensions within the Jewish community, and it's one of those films that's going to really touch your heart and hopefully, again, leave a lasting impression that we could all carry on given the current topical climate that we're in now in this particular theme.
Sounds awesome. And tell us the one thing you want people to take from the festival this year.
Please, 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 just celebrate the unexpected.
And on that note, Igor, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
The Miami Jewish Film Festival will be held January 15th through the 29th. Screenings are at the O Cinema in Miami Shores, Cosford Cinema in Coral Gables, Regal South Beach and Miami Beach Cinematheque in South Beach, Blue Starlight Drive-In in Coconut Grove, and the Aventura Arts and Cultural Center in Aventura. For more information, go to miamijewishfilmfestival.org or call 305-573-7304. For South Florida Arts Beat, I'm Dan Hudak.
Chairman Emeritus of the Florida Film Critics Circle, Dan Hudak, is a nationally syndicated film critic. You can visit him online at hudakonhollywood.com. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will continue right after these messages. Listening to South Florida Arts Beat on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Happy New Year. Ed Bell with you. Coming up on the program, Nanette Zapata, COO of the Fairchild Tropical Botanic Garden, talks about their new art center and Dale Chihuly exhibition. Chef Norman Van Aken serves up a word on food, and our Broward Arts calendar features Jody Horn-Leschinski. Now, our classical arts contributor Charles Greenfield highlights upcoming concerts from the Friends of Chamber Music of Miami, now presenting their 59th season.
Friends of Chamber Music of Miami, under the leadership of Julian Krieger, have established a long track record on South Florida's cultural scene. The concert series also demonstrates great depth and excellence due to its broad performance schedule over five decades. Not surprisingly, its high-caliber repertoire of chamber music has made its local reputation insurmountable, but kept its audience size relatively small due to the often absorbing nature of the music. Krieger has brought some of the world's best performers, the Amadeus, Budapest, Cleveland, Emerson, Guarnari, Juilliard String Quartets, and the Beaux-Arts, and Kallikstein, Laredo, Robinson Trios. 2 years ago, the Tokyo String Quartet played at UM Gusman Hall as part of their American Farewell Concert Tour. Besides string quartets, Krieger himself has an unquenchable appetite for up-and-coming piano virtuosos. In past seasons, he's presented the Austrian-Canadian pianist-composer Czerny expert Anton Querty and Russian star Nikolai Lugansky, as well as pianist Cyprian Katsaris, well-known for his Liszt transcriptions, and the very young British phenom Benjamin Grosvenor. For 2015, Krieger presents 6 concerts, out of which one will be piano and the other will be vocal. The rest will include trio, quartet, and chamber orchestra. Recently, I had the opportunity to talk with Julian Krieger about Friends of Chamber Music of Miami, its mission, his love for the arts, and the season's offerings. Julian Krieger, welcome to South Florida Arts Beat.
Thank you for having me here.
Julian, very quickly, what is the mission statement of the Friends of Chamber Music of Miami?
Friends of Chamber Music was formed as a nonprofit corporation in 1955, long before Krieger, to bring the world's great instrumentalists and chamber ensembles to Miami. And we presently present some of the world's great instrumentalists, pianists, string quartets, trios, chamber orchestras, and we also arrange for master classes in conjunction with FIU.
As a longtime classical music lover and impresario, I call you South Florida's Saul Urick, for those who can remember past a few decades.
I will happily plead guilty to that.
You know most of the A-list artists on the national scene. How do you find new and upcoming quartets, trios, and pianists, and what are the criteria?
The criteria are, well, first of all, we have an artistic advisory committee that includes people like Joseph Kallikstein, Roberto Diaz, who's president of Curtis and one of the world's greatest violists, Santiago Rodriguez from the University of Miami, and James Ennis, who's one of the world's great violinists. And I get recommendations from them. And, of course, I listen to a lot of recordings. We like to attract young people like Benjamin Grosvenor, who's a spectacular British pianist, now 21 or 22 years old. And the Ennis Quartet is a new quartet, and many of us think it's as great a quartet as exists today.
Well, let's get to the exciting schedule for 2015. You start on January 11th at UM Gusman with one of your favorite groups, the eminent Kallikstein, Laredo, Robinson Trio. They've been around the block since 77, and they still excite audiences. What is the sound they produce? And go over briefly their program.
Well, they are going to be celebrating in a year or so their 30th anniversary. And I think next year we will have them do the complete Beethoven piano trios in 3 concerts. This year they're doing the Brahms C major trio, Opus 87, and the Tchaikovsky trio, which is one of the very popular, accessible piano trios.
And I'm sure tickets are going to go quickly on that.
Yes, we've had a good demand.
On February 7th, you bring for the first time, I believe, the Hugo Wolf Quartet to UM Gusman. Tell us a little bit about its namesake, Hugo Wolf, composer of almost 300 Lieder, and the group itself and the program, Wolf, Smetana, and Dvorak.
Well, the Hugo Wolf Quartet has been widely acclaimed in Europe as being the successor to the Alban Berg Quartet, which is one of the world's great quartets. And they've been getting fabulous reviews. Their recordings have been wonderful. And so we're delighted to bring them to Miami for the first time.
And their namesake, besides the leader of the composer himself, is that a composer that you're...
Hugo Wolf?
Yes.
Well, he was a great composer, and his Italian Serenade is very popular. So we're delighted to have them.
February 24th brings the fine pianist Stephen Huff to the Coral Gables Congregational Church. How would you describe his pianistic career, favorite composers? And I notice it's almost all Debussy.
And Chopin.
And Chopin.
Stephen is probably the greatest British pianist in the world today. He's made probably close to 25 recordings on CD that have been widely acclaimed with an enormous repertoire. He also has composed. 2 years ago, he played a sonata that he had written. And there isn't any better British pianist who's had the career that he has.
And it's rare that we have almost an all Debussy concert with just the Chopin.
That is rare. And I think he's playing the complete ballades of Chopin.
Now, the 40-member Curtis Institute Chamber Orchestra and conductor Robert Spano are showcased March 11th at UM Gusman Hall. Maestro Spano has had a distinguished career at the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra and as director of the Aspen Music Festival. Let's hear a little bit about him and the program.
Well, he is well known for being the music director of the Atlanta Symphony. He's also conducted the New World Symphony here in Miami. The program that he will conduct is going to include a brand new concerto by Jennifer Higdon that she is writing for Roberto Diaz, who plays the primrose viola, one of the great instruments. And Roberto was principal violist of the Philadelphia Orchestra, is now president of Curtis Institute. James Judd thinks he's the greatest violist in the world. And Spano's also going to conduct some songs that he has written as a composer.
The March concert on the 22nd at UM Gusman brings the Chamber Orchestra Kremlin with conductor Misha Rashlevsky. Who are these musicians and what kind of program will we hear?
Well, the program will include a Rossini sonata, Prokofiev Vision Fugitives, and Tchaikovsky Serenade for Strings, but also he's going to bring a wonderful young female violinist who studied at Juilliard with Yitzhak Perlman, and she's going to play Saint-Saëns' Introduction and Rondo Capriccioso, which is one of the most popular violin virtuoso pieces in the repertoire.
And somewhat difficult.
Yes.
And you're ending the season April 19th with American tenor Arthur Khalil, accompanied by pianist Ken Noda at Temple Beth Am. How'd you find this young tenor from the Met?
Well, I have an arrangement with Ken. For the past 10 years, Ken has come to Miami. He is James Levine's musical assistant at the Metropolitan Opera. He is a Barenboim protege who has played as soloist with Claudio Abbado, George Schulte, Zubin Mehta, and Barenboim, of course. And each year he brings down a singer that both he and Levine think will emerge as a superstar. He's brought down Morris Robinson, Kate Lindsay, among others. And so every year he tells me who he thinks we should hear, and he brings them down.
So I'm not really wrong with that Saul Yurick reference to you. There we go. Any hints for next year's series?
Well, we're talking to the Borodin Quartet next year. Next year is the 60th anniversary of Friends of Chamber Music. The Borodin Quartet is celebrating their 70th anniversary next year, and so we thought it would be nice to open the season with them. The Ennis Quartet is going to start an all Beethoven cycle of string quartets, and we plan to have Nikolai Lugansky next year, Benjamin Grosvenor, and some other fabulous artists. Ken Noda again with a singer that he brings down. And
well, I didn't
highlights.
Know getting to be 60 was so bountiful and so youthful. Anyway, Julian Krieger, thank you for coming to South Florida Arts Beat.
Well, thank you for having me.
In their 59th season, Friends of Chamber Music of Miami showcases the world's top string quartets, trios, and upcoming pianists. Besides bringing exemplary chamber music to South Florida, their mission is to reach out to new audiences, especially people who may not be as well acquainted with the sometimes difficult but always rewarding world of chamber music. Concerts are held in three fine acoustic spaces: Coral Gables Congregational Church, UM's Frost School of Music's Gusman Hall, and Temple Beth Am. For ticket information and the schedule for the 2014-15 season, call 305-372-2975 or go to their website at miamichambermusic.org. For South Florida Arts Beat, I'm Charles Greenfield.
Charles Greenfield is a classical music contributor for the Sun Sentinel and has written for the Miami Herald. You can email him at cdgpm@bellsouth.net. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat continues in just a moment. It's South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Happy New Year. Later on the program, you'll hear A Word on Food with Chef Norman Van Aken and our Broward Arts Calendar featuring Jody Horn Leshinsky.
We are stardust, billion-year-old carbon. We are golden, caught in the devil's bargain. And we got to get ourselves back to the
Located at 10901 Old Cutler Road in Coral Gables, the Fairchild Tropical Botanic Garden comprises 83 acres of world-renowned plant collections and art exhibitions. For more information, you can go to fairchildgarden.org. I recently spoke to the garden's COO to find out more about their latest offerings. Ms. Nanette Zapata, welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat.
Thanks, Ed. It's great to be here.
Now, we're all very excited because there's a new addition to the wonderful Fairchild Tropical Botanic Garden, and it is going to be a great performance space for the arts. Tell us the name. Tell us all about this magnificent addition to the gardens.
Absolutely. So we have inaugurated the beautiful Adam R. Rose and Peter R. McQuillan Art Center at Fairchild a couple of weeks ago in December. It's a beautifully constructed 3,000-square-foot interior space that allows us to exhibit the works of some of the world's masters, music, sculpture, print, anything related to the arts.
Now, is this a brand new standalone building? Because I do remember a wonderful spot that you had when I last visited a number of years ago.
Yes, this is a standalone building. It's adjacent to the Sheehan Visitor Center, which is probably what you're remembering.
Yeah.
And they connect to each other through a pathway. And the building sits at the perimeter end of the garden, and it feels as if it's always been there. And it keeps with the existing aesthetics and architecture of the garden. So it feels very time sensitive. It doesn't feel very time present.
Mm-hmm. So you all were lucky enough to grab this very busy artist, Dale Chihuly, bring him back to the gardens. And you had your opening on December 6th. How was that received?
Incredibly. Thank you. Yes. So Dale is back a third time. This is the only time in his entire artistic history that he's ever visited a place, any whether museum, a gallery or whatever, for a third time. So he has never done that for a second time. So we're incredibly honored that he's chosen Fairchild to once again exhibit his beautiful work.
And tell me what will be on exhibition with Dale's wonderful new artwork, we hope.
Yes. So this is an entirely new exhibition, and the garden is 85 acres large, and 65 acres of it are essentially covered with art. So you can imagine how immersive the experience will be for everybody who visits. And all of the pieces are new to Fairchild. We have actually a couple of iconic pieces, primarily because they've been graced in magazines and in book covers, and we wanted to show how beautiful they were, not only in print, but also in real life. And but mostly the exhibition is new. And it just twinkles, and it's just so significantly beautiful. It'll take your breath away.
Would you describe for us, Nanette, perhaps one or two of the new pieces we haven't seen yet?
Yes. So we have a couple of pieces that were commissioned specifically for Fairchild by Dale. And one of them is called El Sol de la Citron, which is essentially a lemon-colored sun. And it sits at the very end of the Overlook LA. And it's a beautiful, globe-like, large-scale sculpture that sits like an exclamation point at the end of one of our most important vistas, and it sort of beckons Miami sun to hit it. So it's really quite spectacular. Then there's also another piece over by another vista, which is called the Blue Sapphire. And it's a blue punctuated, again, circular piece. And it sort of spills into the Bailey Palm Glade with little snippets and floats and cattails throughout in blue as well. And it's really quite magical. And the striking thing about both of those is that the Bailey Palm Glade is a very formal piece within the garden. It's the most formal architectural structure within the garden. And so you feel the structure of those installations. And then a few feet later, as you head into the rainforest, you have a very gentle, non-invasive approach to the installation. You have very organic pieces. You walk by and you're not quite sure if you saw art or if you're not quite sure if you saw a plant. So it's much more organic, and it keeps with the tone of the landscape architecture.
Well, you paint quite an exciting description of what we all can see when we go. Now, Dale Chihuly's work will be seen through May the 31st, and you even light them up at night.
Yes.
On certain evenings.
Yes, thank you. It's very easy to paint a picture of something so beautiful. Anybody should be able to do this because it's really quite spectacular. So we're opening at night on Thursday nights and on Sunday nights for the next 6 months. And the goal is to create a dreamy wonderland of art and nature. And I work at Fairchild every day, been there 15 years or so. And I know this garden so well. And the exhibition is one thing in the daytime and a completely different experience at night. It just takes your breath away. The glass glistens. The silhouette of the plants sort of hit the lights ever so slight. So you get this movement of shade and shadow at night with the bright lights of the subtle glassworks. I can't describe it enough how beautiful it is. Mm-hmm. I just wish everybody could come and see it because it just, it's otherworldly almost.
Now, of course, more information is at fairchildgarden.org, or you can call them directly at 305-667-1651. We have with us today the Chief Operating Officer of Fairchild Tropical Botanic Garden, Ms. Nanette Zapata. And tell us about the Science Village. Describe what that entails, and has it changed over the years?
Yes. So the Science Village was opened 2 years ago. And the crux of it was to create a showcase of science education at the heart of the garden. So the Science Village is essentially on Grand Central Station, for lack of a better description of where directionally where the labs are. And it houses our science team. It houses the science education network of graduate students. And it also has four labs within the Science Village. And in those labs, we're doing incredible DNA work. We're doing microscopy work and mango research. We have a 20-student lab, a very large 20-student lab with full functioning equipment necessary to do very comprehensive scientific work. We have a butterfly laboratory, and then we have the micropropagation lab for the Million Orchid Project, which is a citizen science urban conservation program that will reintroduce a million orchids to South Florida.
I'm sure David Fairchild would be thoroughly delighted.
Yes, because I think one of the things that really makes Fairchild special is sort of a sense of constitutionality. The garden was established with certain principles in mind, principles of science, principles of exploration, the principles of conservation and education. And all of those things we've kept to very, very disciplined, in a very disciplined manner. So these great founders created this incredible garden, and we just expanded on their hard work and their very visionary sort of appeal. And today we have the largest science education program in the country. We're teaching botany that isn't really done down here in any of the major institutions. Mm. We're introducing, as I said, a million orchids to South Florida. And we have a beautiful butterfly exhibit that is considered among the best in the world. All in South Florida, right here in Coral Gables, right in Miami, 15 minutes from most people's homes. So to think that this is right here in South Florida is such a gem. It makes Miami such a world-class city.
And that's certainly just scratching the surface. The garden is just amazing. You have your International Mango Festival. You have Mango Growers Summit and the Mango Brunch. You have a Plant ID Workshop. You have a Tropical Plant Conservatory and Rare Plant House Tours. Tours all over the gardens, of course. And you all operate with thousands of volunteers.
Yes. We have about 1,500 volunteers, about 800 of whom work every week, at least 4 or 5 hours a week. And we could not, absolutely could not function. We could not operate the garden at the scale that we're operating the garden without these incredibly dedicated volunteers. In fact, we were just talking about the Science Village, and the science labs are basically operated entirely by volunteers, which is really entrepreneurial because most labs don't operate those ways. They have technicians. They have other types of individuals who work, but we mostly have retired professionals. We have volunteers who've, you know, dedicated their entire lives to science in some capacity, and they want to continue to do that, but at their speed and at their stead. And so we're lucky enough to have all those years of experiences within those labs and within the garden, manicuring the grounds and in our hosts, in our visitor services, our visitor experiences, our education program. So if you come to Fairchild, you have about a 10-to-1 chance that you're going to run into a volunteer more than you will a staff person. That's how enriching they are to the garden.
Well, should any of our listeners want to volunteer or perhaps become a member, go once again to fairchildgarden.org or call them directly, 305-667-1651. They are also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. And I'm sure that they would appreciate your help or membership. Thanks so much to Nanette Zapata, the Chief Operating Officer of the Fairchild Tropical Botanic Garden, for catching us up on the exciting new art center and all of your programs.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Ed.
We are stars. We are friends. We are kind.
Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will continue in just a moment. Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Ed Bell with you. And now, Chef Norman Van Aken gives us a word on food.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red ripe tomatoes. I'm never satisfied. I want the frim-fram sauce with the offs and fade, with shafafa on the side.
Hi, I'm Norman Van Aken, and welcome to A Word on Food. Today's word on food is labneh. My experience with true Jewish food is limited, I'm sad to say. My mother knew tons more, but I was raised in the farm country of Illinois. She was raised in the wonderland of Manhattan. She knew it all, from Ashkenazic to Za'atar. I knew bupkis. But say what you will about me, and some have, I am always willing to learn when it comes to food. So after hearing about a prized Jewish deli in Miami, I felt compelled to up my game. We drove to a place named Etzel Itzik Deli on Dixie Highway. And before we dive into that deli, just let those last few words roll around in your mind with me. Did you hear them? Etzel Itzik Deli on Dixie Highway. Is it any wonder we have fusion foods in our land? I love the hyphenations it can lead to. It was as if there was a magical portal to Tel Aviv the moment we entered the small restaurant. I was not sure who the eponymous proprietor was. He might have been the man with the ponytail and the blue Smurf Crocs. But everyone here has the gene of family. And I don't mean in the blood-related way. It is more of one large human family. They don't say welcome as if it were part of training handed down from corporate. It is often a hug or shaking of hands. I looked at the glossy menu with so many items on it. Janet, my wife, looked at me for guidance. She's from the same small town in Illinois. But before any decisions needed to be made, a server came by with a tray of prepared vegetables and asked which of the salad bar we wanted. Eggplant, chickpeas, pickled cucumber, and others in small dishes enticed me. I asked for 3 of them. He said, "Take more," and we did. Pita came to the table next. It was thick, but not one bit tough. I saw a creamy dish set down by our new neighbors. The tables are cozy. I asked what it was, and the lady beamed, "Labneh, it is heavenly here." So with that, I ordered labneh and a few other things. I could tell this was not going to be a place to be absorbed with even a few visits. Labneh, for the uninitiated, is much like the Greek yogurt so many are wolfing down nowadays. It is thick and engagingly tart. A dusting of za'atar and a pool of golden olive oil give it zap and lushness that kept us dipping that pita again and again. The fried eggplant Janet requested created a whole new range of flavors when it arrived. We decided that labneh was a recipe we needed to make when we got home. I could think of many ways to enjoy it. Maybe with Yemenite shug. I can learn. As we were paying our tab, I asked our server where the family who owned the deli was from. He looked at me quizzically and then said, "Israel." I pointed to a hand-lettered sign on the small deli case. He turned and read it to see what I was chatting him up about. I read the sign aloud, "Moroccan fish balls?" with my voice going up in the universal question tone. The server looked back at me, shrugged and smiled, and said, "I don't know. Ask Itzik." "I will, while having shakshuka next visit." I'm Norman Van Aken, and that's my word on food.
Norman Van Aken is the author of the memoir, No Experience Necessary, The Culinary Odyssey of Norman Van Aken. Please tune in tomorrow morning at 8:34 on Weekend Edition to hear Grits. And here's our South Florida Arts Beat entertainment calendar. And we welcome back Jody Horn-Lashinsky, Assistant Director of the Broward Cultural Division. Jody, how have your holidays been?
My holidays were so much fun, filled with family and friends and way, way too much food.
Oh, but that's the way to do it. Congratulations.
Thank you. You too. So I want to remind listeners that there are now two ways to view Broward Cultural Division's Cultural Quarterly Fine Arts Magazine. You can view the latest issue from your laptop, tablet, or smartphone in a flipbook format, or view it as a website at culturalquarterly.org. In this issue, Stephanie Krulik investigates the new arts journalism niche in reporting through the Broward Arts Journalism Alliance program, and Rachel Galvin gets up close and personal with artist Catalina Jaramillo. There are four issues published annually, and if you would like to stay subscribed, simply visit broward.org/arts and click on Stay Connected. Ed, I know we talk a lot about this, mm-hmm. but I want to make sure that our listeners have every opportunity to participate in Broward 100, the county's year-long celebration of its centennial. In addition to great sanctioned events, there will be a series of 10 murals installed throughout Broward County, a series of inside-out portrait pastings, and Duende, the three-day grand finale, October 2nd through 4th. If listeners would like to participate, please send us an email to broward100@broward.org or visit the website at broward100.org. And we are planning a very special surprise event for Valentine's Day in cooperation with the City of Wilton Manors. Stay tuned for details. So here's a list of Broward 100 sanctioned events, and we'll go through them very quickly. You have one more chance to celebrate the holidays at the Holiday Fantasy of Lights with 3 miles of giant animated holiday displays and illuminated trees. It is larger than ever, blending the favorites of the past and the excitement of new creations at Tradewinds Park through Saturday from 6 to 10 p.m. daily. Now through January 8th in Gallery 6 at Broward County Main Library, you can view the exhibit, The Courage to Remember, Holocaust Exhibit. The exhibit features more than 200 exclusive photographs that cannot be seen anywhere else in the world, offering an amazing insight through 4 distinct themes. The Vienna Center for the Arts at St. Thomas Aquinas High School presents The New Blue in concert. Yale University Female A Cappella Group, Thursday, January 8th from 7 to 9 p.m. From contemporary pop and rock arrangements to jazz and swing standards to classic Yale songs and then folk songs with protest roots, The New Blues repertoire has something for everyone. On Saturday, January 10th, South Florida Jazz presents Thomas Kotick and Tayo Lin performing Tango Nuevo, the music of Astor Piazzolla, from 8 to 10 p.m. at the Rose and Alfred Miniacci Performing Arts Center. These renowned classical performers have immigrated from Argentina and China, and they interpret the music of Astor Piazzolla innovator of a tango style that incorporates elements of jazz and classical music. Now through January 18th, the Michael Dean exhibition is on display at the Art and Culture Center of Hollywood. Dean transforms the project room into a pop-up record store with vintage rock photography by Mark Diamond. Dean is one of the best purveyors of vintage vinyl in South Florida, and he used to spin for WBUS, which used to be known as the Magic Bus when underground radio was in its infancy in Miami. From January 9th to February 10th, Who's Fooling Who? An exploration of the deceptive curator, Jill Slaughter, is on display at Studio 18 in the Pines. Who's Fooling Who? Showcases the work of 10 artists that explore contrary notions, inviting viewers to become participants by abandoning expected experiences in exchange for the unlooked for. The community participation aspect of the exhibition asks No More Tears, a support organization for survivors of domestic abuse, to share their story. Broadway legend Audra McDonald made history when she scored a sixth Tony Award, more than any other actress, for her portrayal of Billie Holiday in Broadway's Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill. On January 8th, get the inside scoop and enjoy classic tunes as Audra shoots the breeze, dishes the dirt, and raises the roof with host and pianist Seth Rudetsky at 8 p.m. at Parker Playhouse. Join NSU Museum of Art, Fort Lauderdale, for Tea and Art History, launching January 7th from 2:30 to 4 p.m. In this new program, participants will enjoy traditional afternoon tea and explore works by the world's greatest artists with the Sunny Kaufman Senior Curator, Dr. Barbara Bueller-Lenz. The State Ballet of Russia presents one of the greatest classical ballets of all time, Swan Lake, on Sunday at the Coral Springs Center for the Arts at 2 p.m. This full-scale production set to the music of Tchaikovsky follows a heroic young prince as he works to free the beautiful Swan Maiden from an evil spell. The State Ballet Theater of Russia presents 50 of Russia's brightest ballet stars to bring this romantic tale of true love to glorious life. If you would like more detailed cultural event information, please visit artscalendar.com, Broward County's complete guide to the arts. Never miss a thing. Get there.
And that's the always informative Jody Horn-Leshinsky, Assistant Director of the Broward Cultural Division. Jody, thanks so much for bringing in the new year for us.
Well, thank you, and I hope you have a healthy and a happy.
You too.
Thank you.
And that's today's edition of South Florida Arts Beat. We hope you enjoyed the show. I'm Ed Bell, producer and host. Our theme was composed by Mike Levine and performed by Mike and Sam Levine. Paul Leary is our online producer. Thanks to our technical director today, Andy Wagner, and our contributors, Dan Hudak, Charles Greenfield, Norman Van Aken, and Jody Horn-Leshinsky. Call us with your comments, 305-995-2258. Fax us your event info, 305-995-2221. Or email it to us at info@wlrn.org. We'd like to hear from you. Monday at this time, Topical Currents with hosts Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, Monday at 1 o'clock. Have yourself a great weekend, and please, as always, keep your dial set right here to 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Until next time, this is Ed Bell saying Happy New Year, bye-bye, enjoy.